Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning. Latest edition of the Burr News Facebook Live interviews. I'm joined today by Walter Robban, the Deputy Premier Minister for Transport. Mr. Robban, thank you very much for sparing some time. I know you guys are very busy, but it's a pleasure to have you here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We'll cut straight in. There's an awful lot of issues under your ministry at the moment. You're pretty busy. Let's start off with the airport, first of all, though. And I know that in the PLP's manifesto, there was a 100-day pledge. And one of them was to review the privatisation contract between Aecon and to see if Bermuda can get a better deal. Now, you've got 23 days left. Where are you with that review?
That review is currently going on, and we will announce to the public once we're finished with our assessment. I'll have to discuss it with my cabinet colleagues and others, but we are carrying out as we speak.
Can you give me an idea of who's doing the review and the scope of the review?
It's been done internally by both the Attorney General's Chambers and the Bermuda Airport Authority, along with the Ministry.
And the scope?
The contract, the whole contract.
Right, so you're reviewing the whole contract?
Yes.
Is there anything specifically you're looking for?
I think it's very clear to everyone the PLP's position on the contract. I think everybody's clear as to what the public's position was on the contract. It was not popular how this contract was devised. And we feel that in light of the points that we made prior to the contract being finalized, that those points are valid and we must do our best as the government of the day to find out if there's a better deal for the country.
When you say there's a better deal, is that a way of reducing costs? Is that a way of getting out of the contract and getting somebody else in?
Well, I think we all know what the terms of the contract were. They were well publicized. There's a 30-year requirement to pay a considerable amount of money to the developer and who will be running the airport. And we want to know if that can be much more shaped in Bermuda's interests, at the least. And if there are other options we have, we will consider them. But at this point, it's about finding a better deal. And that is what we are endeavoring to do for the people of Bermuda.
So perhaps looking at whether the 30 years can be extended or reduced, or interest rates can be reduced?
I can't commit to any of those details at this point, but we're looking at every possibility around this contract to find a better deal.
If you could scrap it, would you?
I cannot comment on that at this point, on what our options will be, other than to find a better deal.
Is this kind of thing, is there a precedent for this kind of thing where a government comes in and tries to review a contract, especially of this magnitude?
Not in Bermuda's history, but I'm sure in other countries. We saw that the contract with Ecuador that flew with the same company was reviewed, and the courts made a ruling in that contract against the contractor Aecon. So clearly, in some cases, these contracts may not seen as being the best interest of the country. So we're just taking the best approach we can. We said prior to the election that this should have been tendered out as per government's financial instructions, as per even the UK's green paper instructions. And we would like to endeavor that at least we as government engage in a process that will ensure that Bermuda has the best opportunity with this development.
You said there was no precedent for Bermuda. By doing this, are you concerned at all that it sets a bad precedent?
We are concerned about everything that might not be in Bermuda's best interest. Right now, as we are clear on this particular arrangement, we want to ensure that Bermuda has the best possible arrangement that will be in her long-term interest.
Are you negotiating directly with Aecon on this?
Not myself at this
point. Not yourself, but in terms of the review, is it directly with Aecon or is CCC involved?
This is being done internally at the moment.
Oh, okay. So there's been no discussion with Aecon at the moment or CCC?
We will deal with that after we've done our own review and see what we can arrange with them, but at the moment, it's an internal review.
And presumably, when you've done the review, you will release the results of that review to the public so they have an idea what's going on?
We will look at and see how we can do this. Of course, since the public voted us in with that 100-day plan, we're going to tell them what we plan to do.
But you release the full details of the review.
I can't commit to that at this point, but we will fulfill our 100-day commitment to ensure that we've gone through this review in the best interest of Bermuda.
Okay, well, obviously on the 100 days, well, I guess we'll be looking to see what happens. Now, the other issue that's been very central for you at the moment, of course, is the issue with the buses. You've been very busy with the buses. Just to remind the viewers, the throne speech said that residents who rely solely on public buses to get to and from work are severely impacted when a lack of available buses detrimentally affects the service, which in turn causes them to be late. The former government left 14 mechanic positions vacant, which caused a lack of buses, which caused a lack of sufficient buses to meet demand. And then it goes on, in order to increase reliability of public routes, to instill confidence in the service, and to reduce overtime paid to repair ageing buses, the government will invest in new buses and will immediately fill 6 vacant maintenance positions. Now, where are we in that process? Where is the government in that process?
We are moving forth with those points that you've outlined. We are filling vacant posts. We have at least four mechanics that we've sourced locally that we are looking to put into place working. We are looking to fill the additional 14 posts. And bear in mind that there was a hiring freeze that we inherited that had come from the government. Certainly for DPT, that hiring freeze has been removed so that we can fill those vacant funded posts, the 14 within the maintenance department, which is where those 14 are. So we're looking to ensure that we have, over time, more mechanics who can do more of the work that is required.
Okay, because on September the 29th, you were quoted as saying, I think, that there'll be 4 new buses, and I think you were going to announce 6 positions are going to be filled at that stage.
Yes, we're working to fill those positions, obviously.
But all 14 will be filled at some
stage. We're endeavoring to fill as many of those vacant mechanic posts as we can. So we're moving steadily ahead to do that. Obviously, you mentioned the 4 buses which are on their way. They will be here by the end of the year. We are currently preparing an RFP for additional buses. We are also working with our manufacturers to source some support for our mechanics division as well.
So they'll come across
that
from
will
Germany.
Augment. Yeah, they will augment who we can source locally, and we are.
So is that in addition to the 14?
Yeah. So we'll get some help as we always do from our manufacturers.
No, it's happened before. Yeah, I just want to be clear. Yeah.
So we're doing those things. We're continuously working with DPT to deal with some other issues that they have with equipment and other things that will help to ensure that we can repair the buses more efficiently and bring down the rate of these cancellations and those that are out of service.
So the 4 new buses should be on the roads by the end of this year, all being well.
Yeah, yes.
What kind of time scale are you looking for the further 8 that you announced will be brought here?
Well, that's subject to us getting through the RFP process. But we're hoping certainly by that money being available, and we will begin to go out before the end of the year to get that RFP totally squared up, if not by the early next year.
In the past, I believe I'm right in saying, of course, you'll correct me, that the government's always gone to MAN in Germany. With this RFP process, will that mean another manufacturer coming in? Another bus manufacturer?
Yes, it'll be an open RFP for any manufacturer.
Worldwide?
Yes.
As well as Bermuda?
Yes.
If possible?
Yeah.
And when do you expect that to be completed, then? Any timeline on that?
Well, that is being completed now. Government has a particular process with the Office of Procurement, which we have to go through, but it's being prepared now in conjunction with the department. And I'm hoping that RFP will be completed very soon so it can be put out there to the public to view, and hopefully we'll get some good options that we can source.
Do you think the 12 extra buses, will that go a long way, or will it solve the problem of cancellations you've got and help with the aging bus fleet you inherited?
It will help.
So it's not going to end the problem?
No, we need to get into a system of perhaps for a period of time 5 or so buses a year to bring down the average age from 7 to from 11, which it is now, to 7.
Right.
That's the primary goal. If we can get the average age of the fleet down to 7, then we're in a place where we can operate comfortably.
And do you anticipate doing that over the term of this Parliament?
With the assistance of the Ministry of Finance, yes.
Yes. Well, that's obviously my next question, isn't it? Where's the money coming from? You've got 4 new buses, an RFP for 8 new buses. You're bringing in 14, hopefully, mechanics. You're talking about bringing people in from Germany, from the manufacturers. That doesn't come for free.
No, but the Ministry and the Minister of Finance is supportive of us dealing with this, so I know I have his support, and we will properly plan this out so it can be done fiscally.
But presumably that will be dealt with by a budget increase or supplementary estimates.
I cannot commit to that or give you any information on that, but I know that I have the support of the Ministry of Finance to address this problem over time.
Well, we'll look out for the budget, I suppose. We'll have more details in February of what's going to happen.
Yes.
The 14 mechanics you want to recruit, I think you said that you found four locally. Is your aim to try and get Bermudian mechanics for all those posts?
We would love to be able to source all those mechanics locally, but we know that there's a shortage of those types of mechanics. We are also sourcing from within DPT as well, so that anybody who's interested in being trained up can actually get into a program to be trained up within a period of time to be a heavy mechanic as is required.
Okay, so you'll look to train Bermudians
within
DPT?
Oh, yes. That'll be our first option.
Okay, and then hopefully...
In DPT and also outside as well, but
It will slow the process down for you, though, won't it? Of course, of getting fully qualified mechanics.
Yes, but that's the first step. If we need to go elsewhere, we will consider that, but we'll do that with our partners, with the union and others, to see what we can do so that we can get what we need. They know, everybody who's in this knows what the issues are, and they are supportive of us moving forward in a way that can help to deal with the issues that we're confronting.
We see, it seems almost every day at the moment, starting from around September the 15th, I think it was, a wave of bus cancellations. When do you think that they will stop?
That's a very good question. We have an old fleet. That is part of the challenge we're facing. So as we fix a bus, often we have to deal with that bus only being functional for a period of time because it's old. And that's one of the challenges we have, that even as we fix them to get back on the road, running them on the road taxes them, and then we have to take them off because they're old. And even the ones that we bought newer in 2014, they're being worked additionally because the rest of the fleet is taxed itself, or much of it is out of commission. So we have to do some things differently, which we're working on, to work with what we have until we can get some new assets that can help to relieve some of the stress on the rest of the fleet.
When would you like to see the end of bus cancellations?
Tomorrow,
clearly. Realistically? You must be planning. You must have a kind of timeline.
I am working with DPT on a plan over the upcoming weeks to reduce the cancellations. So I'm hoping that that plan will, once deployed, will work and bring down the rate of cancellations that we have.
Which, presumably, coming on to the next part of this issue, will reduce the reliance on the minibuses that you are contracting. How's that going so far? Can you give me an idea of how many times they've been called upon to be used?
Well, they've been used daily since we've signed the contract. Over a two-week period, they did almost over 250 runs, and I think they actually carried over almost 6,000 passengers. So
school children, predominantly.
School children, yes. And so that's working, and we are grateful to their assistance. It is a temporary measure, absolutely, until we can deal with some of the other issues.
It's a temporary measure, but you came out and said it's going to cost up to 630,000, I think it was. Is it likely to hit that, or is it going to go beyond even?
We are endeavouring to keep that number very low.
So do you think it's likely to hit that level?
I am not looking to get close to that number.
How are you going to try and stop that?
By fixing as best we can the rest of the fleet, so that we can have more of our regular buses running.
How long is the contract for the minibuses?
It will end perhaps before the end of the year.
Okay.
So it's for this term, and we believe that we can have better situation closer to the end of the year once we get the new buses and once some of the work that we're doing on the fleet actually begins to get stable.
And if the worst case scenario comes and you're not able to do that, will the contract be renewed?
I can't commit to that. I'll have to discuss that with the Ministry of Finance and my colleagues.
Because it's quite an important issue to tell viewers, though, that especially when it's aimed at school children, they need a bit of stability.
We are not going to do anything that's going to inhibit the school children getting to school. We will make sure they can get to school, whatever we have to do.
So these still are hired on an as-needed basis?
Yes, where they're needed.
So there's no fixed number every day? So you coordinate in terms of bus cancellations, call the minibus operator and say, hey, we need you at X, Y, Z.
Well, I believe it's all arranged as to which school runs they're doing, and they do them so that, and they were purposely put in place so they could relieve the regular buses from having also that responsibility, so that we can keep more of our buses either out of service to maintain, while maintaining the regular morning runs for the regular commuters, so that it gives us some wiggle room to keep more in a maintenance cycle in the morning, so that we can try and deploy them later in the day as best we can if we have them.
You never announce in all the press conferences and press releases and everything, you never announce who got the contract?
It's the Minibus Association.
Okay.
So it's not individual minibus operators we contract with. We contract with the Minibus Association, who then organizes the minibuses for us around the working with DPT.
Okay, well, that wasn't made clear. Well, at least it wasn't clear to me. I'm glad we get some clarity over that.
Sure.
ferries. Next part. Okay. Now then, how are the ferries at the moment?
They're in a good shape.
Are they going to be in a good shape for a good while?
Yes, yes. We are getting rid of the Millennium, and that is primarily because their contract is finished, and we believe we've spent enough money on that. But
the Millennium, that's the St. George's Dockyard route,
right.
Yeah.
And that was brought on to give us some space to bring our other ferries up to scratch in a maintenance cycle. That's been done. So without the Millennium, we should be able to have our existing fleet deal all of the work that is required going forward.
And of course, NCL, they're going to be providing one or two ferries, aren't they? When are they likely to come on schedule? Because
that, sure,
presumably, that will relieve the pressure as well.
That contract has been arranged. I believe it's they're working on having a ferry, as you said. I'm not sure when that contract starts, but it has been finalized with them, and they'll be providing a ferry that will provide lift for their passengers going forward.
So maintenance-wise, you're pretty happy with where they are at the moment. We don't expect to see any problems with the ferries.
I am happy with what they've done. They believe they've met their objectives with the fleet, and I'm confident under the leadership they have there and the team that's there that they'll be able to meet their obligations. They haven't not come up with that before, and even with some of the issues, they have met their obligations, so I'm happy that they will do that.
Just continuing on the theme of the ferries, you made a statement in the House recently to say that the America's Cup had cost, if that's the right phrase, about 1.6 million in ferry costs. Is that correct?
Yes. Due to the lack of funding provided by the former administration to them for the America's Cup obligations, they had to take money from one part of their budget to fund their operation of their ferry fleet, not only their regular runs, but also the additional runs that they were required to have to America's Cup, and that depleted other parts of their budget. So they essentially blew their budget out, if I can use the language, for the rest of the year because of the expenses of the America's Cup and the Millennium Ferry.
And you've tabled a supplementary estimate for that, so you're trying to get another 1.6 million basically out of the budget somehow.
Yes, they have to be able to function for the rest of the year so they can provide the service that everybody wants them to provide. So we have to get that supplementary so they can continue until the end of the fiscal year.
One of the things that Grant Gibbons, the former Economic Development Minister, one of the points he made about this was that he hadn't necessarily, or he seemed to suggest, he hadn't necessarily taken into account the revenue that was generated from the ACBD and the use of those ferries. Have you taken that into account? Do you know what the revenue is?
I've looked into that, and there's been no revenue that's been given to the ferry service from ACBDA. And I'm waiting to get some sort of calculation from the ministry, which they're honored to see what actually happened with that. But I have no information on any revenue, as the minister says. The former minister said that went from ACBDA to the ferries. There's no such revenue that I have been made aware of.
But you've been in touch with them, so you're waiting for an answer?
I'm waiting for an answer, yeah.
Because again, in the House, there was a mention, again by Grant Gibbons, he was talking about a memorandum of understanding with the ACBDA for ferry services during the event. And you said you were aware of the MOU, but didn't know how much was paid by the department. Is this what you're referring to, the memorandum of understanding?
Yeah, there was MOU, but there was no particular numbers attached to it. So there's no evidence at this point that any money was actually from the ACPDA to the Marine and Ports Department, or any revenue that's a part of that activity, is there for me to evidence at all. I'm waiting for an answer for that.
Have you put a deadline on the answer? Because that's quite important, isn't it? That if there is revenue outstanding, you won't need necessarily this supplementary estimate of $1.6 million.
Well, as soon as I can get the answer, I'm assuming that things concerning revenue the Ministry of Finance will be aware of. But if that revenue had been properly organized and provided, certainly it might reduce the amount of money that that department would need. But the Ministry of Finance organizes a supplementary, so clearly for them, they know that that money that we're requesting is what we need. But up to this point, I have no evidence of any revenue that was moved as a result of America's Cup from ACBDA to, or that was to the Marine and Ports Department. There is none. But I'm waiting for a report from that ministry. Myself and the minister have communicated directly on that.
Okay, and if and when you get something, you'll make an announcement in the House,
absolutely.
Presumably.
If there is any to evidence, I will make the public certainly aware of it.
Throughout, just going back to the issue of transport here, generally public transport, with the issues of the buses, and in particular, has it ever crossed your mind to privatise these services?
No.
Not at all, ever?
No.
You don't think that would work at all? That would be a benefit to the people?
No.
Why not?
I don't believe, and my government has never spoken of privatization. I do not believe, certainly I don't, and neither does the government believe that that is the answer. I challenge anyone who believes that they could provide that service affordably and more efficiently than can be done now.
Fair enough. Keeping on the theme of transport, obviously, because you are the transport minister, in the throne speech, I'll read this so that the viewers can have the context. Technology is modernising transport globally, and Bermuda must examine those trends when taking into account the future of public, private and public service transportation. Bermuda is also modernising and is now home to three-wheeled vehicles, two-person rental cars, limousines and water taxis. The government will conduct a thorough review of transportation and will produce a green paper on the future of transport in Bermuda. That will provide various options of modernisation, which also takes into account the needs of the differently abled. Can you kind of expand on what you want to do there and the kind of areas you want to explore and why?
Absolutely. Definitely, we are in the process of preparing to do a green paper, which will then bring about a new transportation plan. The last one was done in 2002, so we wanted, it's high time now that there be a new plan done for transportation in Bermuda. So we're looking forward to that process and engaging with the public and everyone who wants to be involved in that. And that's going to cover every aspect of transport, public, private, any new opportunities that there are, looking at different technologies such as more renewable forms if needed, and if that. And I can say, perhaps as a new piece of information, this is something that the Premier and myself are keen to advance, is renewable options within government itself.
Yeah, I think you guys pledged to replace the fleet with electric vehicles in the government fleet.
Yes, and that is something that we are focused on doing as steadily as we can accomplish, considering.
So there'll be a process whereby if you need to renew a vehicle, we'll look to see if you can replace
it. Yes, and we'll look for renewable options as a top priority.
And that will carry on and on.
Yes,
as a rolling
program. Government.
As a rolling program.
Yes.
In terms of this review of green paper on transport, is that for locals or is that for visitors as well? And what the visitors can use? Because there's been a lot of debate, a lot of discussion about the electric cars, the three-wheeled bikes you mentioned, and stuff like that. And people are saying it's time to allow these for visitors.
Well, I won't go any further than what's already gone with visitor options. We see that we have the mini cars, which are available, and we will continue to assess how that's going. And obviously create a regime that if it is the view of the wider public that that sort of transport can continue to be developed in Bermuda, we will make sure that that's properly handled.
Because you've got you're treading a bit of a tightrope here, aren't
you?
On the one hand, you want to modernize. On the other hand, you've got to protect local jobs.
Exactly. We're not looking to reduce local participation in transport, whether as a user or as a as sort of being a part of the wider transport mix. We want more people to feel enthusiastic about being involved with transport, private side as well as public side.
So it will be for visitors as well, how they can get around that, but that will form part of the review.
every area that might be considered can be dealt with in the green paper, and then ultimately a white paper, and then obviously government initiative in the legislature or otherwise in policy. So it's going to be a very open process that everybody who has ideas and options can make sure that they're part of the green paper process. That's why it's done that way. It's the open end of it, mm-hmm. where everyone...
It's a consultation paper that people are aware.
So it's for the wider community. So we're going to look at all the different options that are out there, any new technologies that can enhance public transport and private transport. Just recently, I was in London on business, and I had a chance to see what's going on in that city around public transport and taxis. With buses, I saw a hydrogen bus that looked very interesting, and I know that that technology is expanding. So there are renewable options that can be perhaps investigated, and also the use of other technologies to track buses to provide more information to commuters. These are things that we'd like to look at to like deploying in Bermuda as options for everyone can use, so that we can make transport friendlier and easier and more efficient for everyone.
The thing with technology, it's something new, it seems, every day. And you mix that with sort of consumer demand and then entrepreneurship. Are you in danger of slowing things down, slowing change down?
We're not trying to slow change down. We can't stop change. And I'd like to see all aspects of transport modernized. You know, we have to move with the time, and it'd be nice if we could have the classic days of very simple sort of buses moving around and things be very quiet and easy, but we can't, because the world out there is kind of pushing in as well, and it's filled with technology, and we should be able to, in Bermuda, as we profess ourselves to be a very sophisticated jurisdiction, we should be able to take those on with ease.
So until the green paper's done, then there's a white paper, will you kind of put a freeze on anything else happening, or will you be sympathetic to people who want to introduce an innovation in regards to transport?
Yes, of course. We're not going to stop anybody who has ideas from coming to us and talking about them. I've already entertained...
What about implementing them?
Well, we'll see about that, but I think first we have to see and see how it fits. And there may be opportunities to bring things on board even before a process is finished with the green paper, white paper. But we don't want to stop innovation, because if it can help make things better for the public and users and ourselves, we will entertain at least even starting to look at it.
There were a few things in the manifesto that I don't think appeared in the Friends speech. I just wanted to see if they were still on the agenda or not with regards to transport. It said, ensure all new public transportation is accessible for Bermudians with physical disabilities. Is that still on the cards?
Yes. We intend to work with those in the community who are advocates for disabled persons to widen the transportation options. This is an area that I personally have wanted to see advanced further. It's unfortunate in the past that it has not. There are a variety of issues why it hasn't, and even some of the efforts that where we tried didn't work well. I'd like to see that corrected in the future to ensure that our disabled community has an option within the public space, at least, to move around and be as mobile as anyone else.
What about introducing electronic fare collection on public transport?
Yes. I have already...
So we're going to be able to swipe our cards to pay for a ferry ride?
I look forward to that being deployed at some point. I have already had discussions with DPT in particular and the staff there. I even, in one of my early tours, I went to the department and I spoke to those who handle fare collection within. And I asked them, well, would you be adverse to us having a sort of money-free system? And they said, absolutely, Minister, we would welcome it.
It is kind of frustrating, I think, maybe for tourists when you go and pay for a fare and you haven't got $10 to get the dockyard and back.
Yes. I would like to move away from that as soon as is reasonably possible. I think that would be of help to everyone, including the operators of our buses, as well as those who wish to use them, particularly visitors and locals alike. You know, so these options are all going to be friendly to everybody as soon as we can properly organize and deploy them.
And what about, he says, extend the public transport network by use of minibuses to areas not currently served by public buses?
Yeah, that can be explored. There have been efforts in the past to do that.
That's a significant budget implication, though, isn't it?
Presumably? Well, If we're working, this is where perhaps the entrepreneurship aspect of public transport can be used, and we can perhaps work with those who have minibuses to augment that system and provide feeder opportunities for smaller operators who can bring people from our larger catchment areas to main routes. That's something that we will look at and will be explored in the green paper, I assure you.
And I assume something else in the green paper is when you say in the manifesto, the election manifesto, reduce the competition for tourism dollars between government and public service vehicles. I've always heard that's a bit of a bone of contention for taxi drivers, want to give somebody a tour and they got on the bus instead.
Yeah, we'll look at that further.
It's presumably that's revenue for you as well, isn't it? Though?
Yes, because I'm not looking to do anything that's going to decrease revenue opportunities for public transport. But I think there's a way that we can work with that. I think a lot of that has to do with the ongoing sort of friction between minibuses and the taxis more so. And if we can reduce that friction, perhaps there'll be less issue with that like segment. But we will work through these issues. I had a recent meeting with members who represent the taxi industry, and it was a very good meeting. And we're interested in talking about the future, not focusing on just the problems.
Just wind back a little bit to talking about electric cars. And
sure.
I've been lucky enough to actually drive a Twizy. It was really good fun. And actually 6'2", 200 pounds, I managed to get in okay as well. Is there any prospect of making that available to locals for lease or even to buy?
I think we'll explore that with our green paper process on how, if we can make further steps with that. I myself took a ride in one of those vehicles, and it was very nice.
You feel
and
every
I
bump.
Was impressed. Yeah, but I was impressed with the vehicle, and we'll see. I think we have to take these steps all very carefully and sort of consider them carefully. I am mindful of some of the tension that was around that discussion when it did emerge,
yeah.
And I'm not interested in duplicating that. I'd like to see the process, if it's going to move forward, it move forward with everybody having some agreement, perhaps in light of some of the concerns about road safety. We need to consider wider options that can be safer for road users. I'm not saying that this is going to be the option, but I think we need to look at that as well.
What will
help to make the use of the road safer?
Do
we stick with just the moped option, or do we move to an option that actually may promote greater safety?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because obviously you're psychic, I was about to say, to come on to that subject. And I've got a daughter who's coming up to the age of 16, desperate for a bike. I don't particularly want to buy a bike, but I would buy one of these. Is that something you would be prepared to look at in the context of road safety, to allow them to be used by a 16-year-old for lease, for sale, whatever? Because they've got four wheels, they've got side impact bars, they're a lot safer.
I think all your points are very valid, but I would prefer to come to a final process on that once we get through this process of the wider considerations of transport.
But in terms of road safety, doesn't that make sense? To allow an inexperienced driver to have four wheels and not two?
I think it is actually a good thing to consider from a safety standpoint, but I think that's not just the only issue, as you know, is around this. I have to consider, and we must consider other options as well. But I think from a safety standpoint, it does provide a case. But let's go through a process of review first and see that we can get everybody who has some interest in this in the room and on the same page, and it be part of a wider consideration of transport in the country. I think that's better. I mean, I also have a daughter who's 17, so I have the same concerns as any parent in the country.
Because we've unfortunately, tragically, seen the 11th death on the road this year. Last year, I think there was something like about 1,500 people who were taken to ER for treatment as a result of road accidents. You've said that we must commit ourselves to personal and community changes to stem the number of accidents and reduce the number of fatalities. We must make our roads safer. What is the road safety plan?
The road safety plan is a plan that must focus on behavior. We cannot enforce totally through the police against this. We cannot just legislate tougher laws. We have to have a program that focuses on changing behavior, and all of us playing a role with making the road safer in our usage of it.
But how?
Well, I think that's something we all need to sit down and talk more about. I think we've deployed a number of things in the past. Like I said, we've changed laws. We've even had systems like Project Ride in place to try and provide some training. I think we're going to have to deploy some new methods, such as perhaps we begin driver education earlier than just in the anticipation of a 16th birthday. Maybe we started from earlier, as low as five, as a child begins to develop a sort of understanding of the conduct in the road, even before they actually are a full participant in the road. I think we have to work on the behavior and perhaps add some other things. Yes, speed cameras, license plate recognition,
speed
all these things
talked about for years
are all things that we can sort of deploy. But I think the chief thing is behavior, and we have to make changes that can enforce on behavior.
Is there a point where if people just aren't taking personal responsibility, they're not changing their own behavior, isn't there a point where government has to be big government and step in and say, we will do it?
Well, I don't think that government can, in its absolute power, change behavior. We have to work.
But there are systems. Even if it's just road calming, more traffic lights, roundabouts, speed cameras, breathalyzers. You can put into place things that will change behavior.
Some of those things are already being used, as you would.
But the breathalyzer isn't. That breathalyzer's been talked about for years.
Well,
been identified.
Well, breathalyzer is used, but I think you're talking more about roadside sobriety testing.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. We do use breathalyzer.
Yes.
Here,
roadside
right?
sobriety testing.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
That is something we've committed to, and that we intend to work on to get in place for this calendar year. We've made a commitment to do that.
So have you overcome the constitutional issues that were raised before, which I believe were around racial profiling?
We are working through those, but we are committed to putting that in place. And I, as the minister, but I share responsibility with that with the Minister of National Security, so I cannot solidly commit myself to doing it by myself. I'm going to have to work with the Minister of National Security and my colleagues to put it in place, but we are committed to having that in place as soon as we can this calendar year.
That's pretty much what the minister told me when I interviewed him about roadside sobriety testing, that he'd have to work with you. So
yeah.
Hopefully we'll see something soon on that.
Yes. I mean, we're in an epidemic when it comes to road deaths. So
it is an epidemic.
So we have
you know?
To attack it aggressively.
It's interesting you say it's an epidemic. I mean, I've actually used that analogy myself, and if it was an epidemic called by health, 11 people die from an illness, you'd be throwing resources at it, wouldn't you?
Well, we are, and we have committed, myself and my Minister Carter have committed to, within this year, putting in place one particular program we think is going to make a difference. It has been held up for many years. We acknowledge that. But we are committed to making sure it's in place this year.
And that's a sobriety
working test. Through whatever the issues are.
One of the things all the work about you do for transport is very well publicised. What probably isn't as well known is that you actually have responsibility for regulatory affairs as well.
Yes.
Could you just explain, for those who don't know what that is, explain what that involves?
Yes, that would include the regulatory authority, which regulates energy and it regulates telecommunications at the moment. That would include the Bermuda Airport Authority, as well. That would include Civil Aviation Authority. Those are the bodies that are under the regulatory umbrella. Everything except finance, tourism, and health. Essentially, I have regulatory umbrella
right.
under my ministry.
And can we expect to see any changes there, any initiatives?
Yes. There will be changes in energy. There will be things that the government are considering doing around the overall regulatory framework, but we will work with the regulatory bodies to do that. We are not interested in interfering any more than necessary in their regulatory duties at all in these areas.
Okay.
Because there are big questions in these areas right now
yes.
that the country's dealing with.
Yes, a lot. Okay, on that note, Minister, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you for
thank
the
you.
Time as well.
Thank you for tuning in to Burn U's Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burnnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.